And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in the dark and dying to be. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Guy who claims he just don't believe in fact. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They learn our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fight inside of me. Yeah, walking. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a far and dying deep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warned. You run down my country, man. You walking on the right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. That's the name of this program here on LightResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. I've just gotten back from Japan, where I delivered a talk on what's come to be called the Great Replacement. And that is the plan by the globalists to replace white people as the majority in Europe and in North America. And that goes certainly one prominent pusher of this plan was the man whose ideas lay behind the European Union, Count Richard Coudenhove Kalergi. And I've spoken about him on previous occasions. Kalergi had this diabolical plan to eliminate nationalities in Europe and national sovereignty, and to create really a new people. And the new European man, according to him, would be a mixed race man, part Oriental and part African, who, according to him, would look like the ancient Egyptians. Now, anthropologically, of course, he was dead wrong. The ancient Egyptians were white, but okay. And he said there would be a new moral elite of Jews, and those would be Jews. This would be the new Europe. Now, he wrote this in 1922. Of course, in 1922, Europe was 99.5% white. These ideas, backed massively by Jewish banking money, gradually percolated around, and after World War II began to come to fruition. However, the original, it was originally called a common market, was economic, and that's the way it was sold to people. And it didn't seem all that dangerous. In fact, somebody who strongly supported more European Union after the Second World War was the leader of the former leader of the British Union of Fascists, Sir Oswald Mosley. So not everybody who supported the idea of a more united Europe was a globalist or a bad guy. There was certainly an argument that could be made for this, for let's say more cooperation, maybe fewer trade barriers, less bureaucracy, and many people bought into the idea of a united Europe on that basis. And as far as that went, there probably was nothing wrong with it. But the long-range goal, once this huge bureaucracy got in place, an unelected bureaucracy in both Brussels and Strasbourg, once it got into place, it started determining all sorts of rules and regulations and so on, which stepped over national sovereignty. And by the time the 60s rolled around, or actually probably more into the 70s, another goal, don't forget, the long-range goal was to eliminate the nation-state. There'd be no more, and people, there'd be no more, there'd be no more Germans, no more Italians, no more French, etc. Well, how could that come about? Well, it could only come about by something that wasn't spoken much, at first, and that was by a population change. How do you change the population? Well, you get Africa to invade you, in fact they did, but not by military force. Africa, the Middle East, Caribbean, and so on, turned up in Europe in increasing numbers. And then you see the European Union bureaucracy and leadership, the real children of Kuhnhof-Kalergi, not his biological children, but ideological children, like Angela Merkel, Nicolas Sarkozy, Emmanuel Macron, and so on. They're all in favor of massive, and it's almost all third world, immigration to Europe. And has essentially changed the population makeup. Many of these people have huge families. Almost every European nation is well below replacement rate, and the replacement to keep your population stable is 2.1 children per woman of childbearing age. And so it's now estimated that some European countries, including Britain, could be majority non-white by the end of the 21st century, or even before. Now, in North America, it's even more critical. Due to the massive immigration flood enabled by the changes in immigration legislation in the United States in 1965, in Canada at the same time, and 1 year later in Australia, with the end of the White Australia policy, massive third world immigration is pouring into these white homelands. America, at the present rate of massive third world immigration, will be majority non-white. The founding settler people will become a minority by 2041. In Canada, it will be by 2050 or perhaps even shortly before that. This is a massive population change. And this didn't happen because of foreign military invasion. None of these countries lost a war, at least that's another point. They did, but they didn't lose the war to the Third World. It wasn't as though Africa had conquered Germany in a war. They hadn't. The evil and the rot actually is far more sinister. So This is the great replacement by policy. And Japan is under similar pressure. Its political elite is not quite as evil or rascally as most of the political elite has been in the West. But the Pope, on his recent visit to Japan, told them that they should open their doors to more refugees, and that's their duty, and so on. Well, I don't think he got much of a very good reception on that. And of course, when we talk about refugees, of course, they're talking about the Third World. The Japanese have a fairly healthy sense that they don't want to be replaced. In fact, some of the people responding on Twitter to the Pope's unasked for suggestions pointed out that the refugee experience of Europe and Europe hasn't been too good. In fact, places like Sweden and Germany have gotten large numbers of horny third world males. There's mostly males coming up, you know. They're all refugees, and many of them have attacked and raped German or Swedish women. In fact, in some places, they're called rape-fugees. Rape-fugees. that was the burden of my talk, and I've got to say I was extremely well-received. And I've got to see a little bit about of Japan. I've seen visited Japan before, and I'm very favorably impressed. First of all, very, very favorably impressed by the fact that it's an almost entirely homogeneous population. Now, that there is an element that isn't homogeneous, and that's a very big concern to people like the Japan First Party. I'll leave that for another day. If you walked around Tokyo or other cities that are even that have even fewer immigrants, like Osaka or Kyoto or so on, you see a population that's almost entirely Japanese. Now, there are, of course, some foreign businessmen. There are, of course, some foreign students and so on. But immigration is very, very low. And the Japanese like it that way. They have not yet consumed the Kool-Aid of diversity. Several things I noted about Japan, and I got two examples of this on my recent trip, is the honesty of the Japanese people. In two cases, a person I was with left something behind in a restaurant. In both cases, we were chased after by a member of the staff. And I don't mean at the door. In one department store, we had actually gotten clear across the floor from the restaurant, almost to the exit where we would have taken an elevator down to the train. In other words, the employee had to actually search for us and return the item. I'm not saying that would never happen in North America, especially in rural or small town area. I'm not saying only white people are honest. But the clear desire to go out of your way to find the, in one case, we were actually chased at, or pursued in order to return the item that had been left behind. You know, that's above and beyond. I think in many cases in North America, if an employee saw you, say cleaning up your table, saw you at the checkout at the cashier paying your bill or your tab, and see that you left behind a sweater or something of that nature, would come after you and give it to you. If you'd left, very likely the employee would put it aside in case you came back, or in some cases they have a lost and found. But I was very impressed by the extraordinary efforts that were made to actually return an item. And I place this to a homogeneous population. They all share a common outlook a common morality. In a diverse society, that's broken up. As the leader of the People's Party of Canada, Maxime Bernier, said, and this was a remark that got him into huge trouble just before he founded his party, was that we perhaps had too much diversity, and diversity stands in the way of unity. Well, what holds you together? In a diverse society, it's every man, or more likely, every ethnic group for itself. It's actually worse because whites are not supposed to have a common interest. If you say, well, I think white people have certain interests in this society, no, you must be a racist. Blacks have certain interests, well, that's okay. But homogeneous society means that the morality is almost universal. That doesn't mean the Japanese people are saints, of course not. It doesn't mean there probably aren't thieves in Japan. There probably are. But because there is that common morality is basically a check on every Japanese person. I'll tell you why. If you all have the same morality, if somebody's inclined to, let's say, step out and not follow that, well, that person faces the disapproval, or maybe even worse, of the group. And where you have homogeneous small groups in North America, the same sort of thing applies. For instance, up until recently, if you were a member of the Royal Canadian Legion, you were told out of respect, headgear is removed when you come into the Legion. So if you forgotten or had your baseball cap on, or you were a disruptive sort of person, didn't give a flip, somebody there would say, out of respect, we remove our hats, or that sort of homogeneous society and that common morality is very important. You know, it wasn't so long ago that certainly in many rural or small town areas, people didn't lock their doors at night. Well, why would that be? Because people were honest. They might be poor. Your neighbor might be poor. You might be poor. But you wouldn't think of going into that other person's place and stealing anything. That's no longer the case in most parts of North America. The end of a homogeneous society means the coming of other people with different moralities. Or let's say... They might be honest among themselves, but they wouldn't think anything of ripping you off. It was not uncommon when I grew up for mothers, and most mothers stayed home in those days, for a mother to see something going wrong with a little group of school kids walking by on the street, or perhaps one kid was bullying another kid, and the mother would go out. And have words with the kid and say, don't do that. That's wrong. Today, if you did that, in most parts, in a diverse society, well, if you talk to a diverse person, like non-white, you might well have the parent, if they have a parent, come around and get all upset at you. Or somebody would say, you said something to me, he's a racist. And so we don't, or in most cases, we don't say anything. And so bad behavior goes unchecked. But there was a common morality. And parents would say, I'd want to say to the neighbor who had perhaps scolded a kid for something or other, thank you. I'm going to give him a good whacking for that, but thank you for stepping in. Because you shared the same morality. Anyway, I saw that in Japan. It's not an original observation. I've seen it before. But it, as it happened twice on a rather, relatively short visit, it made quite an impression. And I've heard the same story from others. In fact, in some cases, far more dramatic. A person has, say, left a wallet on a counter. And in fact, you know, the way some men handle their wallets today, and I always keep mine in my pocket, but, you know, I've been to places where people, where men will put their wallet on the table. Now, it's not exactly that you know, I think that's wrong. I think it's just a little unsafe. But anyway, so, you know, some people do that. And you know, occasionally somebody forgets. Well, I've heard stories of Japanese going to all sorts of efforts to track the person down, including perhaps if there's an identification in there that helps, but if they're staying at a hotel, they might try to use a credit card to find out where the person is in order to be able to, for the full credit card company, in order to try to locate the person to return the wall. I mean, they go to real efforts. Anyway, something I saw that really impressed me. Well, it angered me and impressed me. It impressed me on the part of the Japanese and angered me when I thought of what the situation we face here in Canada and in the United States. And I talked about this with my co-hosts, William Johnson and Ken Givenin, today when we recorded the Ethnostate. And that was this. I went into a couple of department stores in Tokyo, and there on the doors were, you know, Christmas trees and, you know, in painted and so on. And painted across it, my gosh, Merry Christmas. I was just outside a bar in Tokyo. Well, I was in a few bars too. And there was a silver Christmas tree. Okay, they're very nice, about 5 feet tall. And above that was a nicely handwritten, lettered sign in English, Merry Christmas. And I thought, there are a lot of businesses in North America, including big ones, that don't have Merry Christmas. One of the banks I was into today, it spent a whole month pushing the LGBTQ agenda in June. That was Gay Pride Month, and they proudly informed us that they were using shareholders' money to fund over, I think it was 100 and some odd gay projects across Canada, and helped support 67 gay pride parades. And I asked the bank manager at that time, you know, first of all, I said, as a Christian, I really don't appreciate this preachy pro-gay stuff. I come into a bank to transact business, not to get a social justice warrior lecture. But I said, so the bank is celebrating about 1% of the Canadian population. Now, probably 85% or more of Canadians are Christians to one degree or another. And many others who may not even profess a faith celebrate Christmas as a social event, as a secular festival where you celebrate the family being together, giving Santa Claus and things like that. Okay, so Christmas is as close as we're going to get to something that's universal. I said, can we expect to have a Christmas crib or even Merry Christmas at the bank? And she said, well, I don't think so. Well, I was in the bank today, and what did I see? Well, I didn't see Merry Christmas. Actually, I don't think I even saw season's greetings. There was some pathetic-looking little triangular thingy that I guess was supposed to be a Christmas tree. You know, they had it on the counter. And there were a few drab-looking poinsettias, which are a plant commonly seen around Christmas time in these parts. But there was no celebration of that. And I thought, there is Japan, which is overwhelmingly a Buddhist and slash Shinto nation. There are very few Christians in Japan. My guess is they'd be considerably under 1% of the population. So this isn't really even being done for them, for the Christian minority. Exactly why it's done, I'm not quite sure. Perhaps, and many Japanese do celebrate Christmas, not so much from a religious point of view, but from a cultural festival point of view, something they've adopted from the West. But the pride that these businesses showed, the willingness to have that greeting, Merry Christmas. And yet so many businesses in Canada and in the United States, especially the bigs, and they're the worst traitors, won't gag out that word. You know, they would rather say a four-letter word that, you know, you're probably not supposed to say. In fact, the National Post, in another context today, there was a columnist writing about a story, which I will probably deal with in a few minutes. And he said that the paper does not allow you to use this four-letter word. Well, I'm not going to be coy about it. The word's fuck. A store I would almost certainly not have a sign with that on it. Okay, fair enough, and that's proper. But they are even more reluctant to name that festival or feast that the vast majority of Canadians celebrate, either from a religious angle, as do Christians, or from a secular angle. Why? Well, it's something, you know, I urge you to fight back against. You know, I was told today, to my horror, there's actually only 8 days more to Christmas. You know, I'm recording this on the 17th. So here's your chance to testify to what you believe in. Number one, if you haven't already done so, make sure the Christmas cards you send out actually say Merry Christmas. I get sent a lot of Christmas cards by a few organizations I support, and they send you a dozen or so, and some are good enough that they do have Merry Christmas, but I would say about 60% have nonsense like season's greetings or happy holiday, and well, I simply will not send them out. And that's a way that you can practice your faith. And I'm not talking here just on a religious point of view. And it's a big finger in the nose of the cultural Marxists. Something further, though, is sending out the cards, of course. Greet people. Merry Christmas. You know, I do that regardless of the color of the person. And I've noticed I have never had anybody, any third worlder, react with anything else other than a smile. They get it. Some of them are Christians, but even those that aren't Christian, even those that perhaps don't even celebrate Christmas as a secular feast, who could object to Merry Christmas? You're not wishing somebody harm. In fact, you're wishing them pleasure. It's a time for families to get together. And, you know, unlike some of the Jewish feasts or festivals, Christmas is not celebrating the terrible thumping that was given to an enemy of the Jews, for instance, the Passover. And I frankly think it's a horrific story that supposedly the firstborn all the Egyptians was struck dead and died. What a horrible thing. You know, I mean, what do these kids do
to deserve this.
So, but that's a feast. They celebrate. Well, you know, wow. Not much for Egyptians to celebrate. In contrast, Christmas is the celebration of the birth of a baby. And, you know, Christians, of course, believe it's the birth of Jesus, of the Savior. Anyway, rich people merry Christmas. And the only time I've ever seen a look of dislike is from a Jew. And even many Jews don't object. Okay, so that's practicing it. Here's something I do. I occasionally get cards, Christmas cards, from politicians. And I'll tell you what, if it doesn't say Merry Christmas, I send it back. What I did last year, I got a Christmas card that was larger than the one that was sent to me, and I wrote, I'm returning the card you sent me because it's an insult. In the case, this was one case in point. It was a politician, and I say, you know, and I know that in your writing, something like 90% of the people there are Christians who celebrate Christmas, or are Canadians who perhaps don't have a strong religious opinion, but celebrate Christmas as a cultural holiday. You know, as Greta Thunberg says, how dare you? Okay, well, I didn't say quite how dare you, but I said, you know, frankly, this is an insult. And, you know, if you can't manage to gag out the word Merry Christmas, you can take your holiday card or season's card back. In fact, I'm sending you a Christmas card which says Merry Christmas. This is the sort of card you want to send out. I've also done that to a business person I know who would like me to repeat my business with him, and he sent me one of these season's greetings or whatever it was cards last year for last Christmas. And I happen to know he's a Catholic. He has an Italian last name, so it's a reasonable inference. So I sent it back to him with a similar enclosing, a proper Christmas card. And I said, this is a Christmas card. And I said, you know, or ought to know, I'm a Christian. And even if you somehow didn't quite catch that, then I'm like the vast majority of European Canadians. I celebrate Christmas, whether as a religious day or as a secular day, but I celebrate Christmas. And I'm not celebrating a season. I mean, who'd want to celebrate this cold, snowy season? You know, it might be nice to look at, but it's not much fun to shovel it and or drive in it. And a holiday, well, I'm not really celebrating a holiday. Holidays are Saturday and Sunday. There's something special about this. Well, you know, I don't think anybody ever spoken to him that way. And I don't think he was offended. In fact, he was so, I think, concerned. He phoned me up and said, you know, I didn't mean to insult you. And I said, no, you perhaps didn't. But, you know, I'm not taking it as an insult. I mean, directly. I mean, it wouldn't be to his advantage to insult a customer, but or a would-be customer, or a repeat customer. But nonetheless, you know, we're so hypersensitive today to minorities. You know, the minority might be upset with this or upset with that. And we're so careful. Well, what about the majority? The overwhelming majority? What about us getting a little respect? Well, I think he was sufficiently taken aback by that he sent me, by return mail, a real Christmas card, and included in that was a gift card for, I think it was about $50 at a building, household goods, building supply sort of place in my community.
Not that I was angling for that, but what I wanted to draw to his attention was we're not being sensitive to people by excluding ourselves. You know, I had this conversation at the Tim Hortons. That's a popular coffee chain in Canada where I sometimes stop for a coffee and donut. Now, in previous years, they had cups that they gave out at this time of year that had Christmas on one side and Noel, which is the French word for Christmas, on the other. Well, okay, fair enough. That's good. And they have prided themselves up until relatively recently on being quintessentially Canadian. And they promote, you know, things like hockey and so on, all those good things. And in fact, they've become almost an iconic feature of Canada, the Tim Hortons donut chain, which is just, you see them absolutely everywhere. Well, this year, the cup has something about the season, I think. Doesn't mention Christmas or Noel. So I spoke to the girl behind the counter. I said, yeah, you know, why have they changed from Christmas or Noel to this thing? Oh, well, you could see the discomfort in her eyes. And she said, it's, I think, more inclusive because some people don't celebrate Christmas. I said, yeah, well, a very tiny minority don't. We don't, she, I think, used the word inclusion. And I said, you know, we don't practice inclusion by excluding ourselves. How are we including other people if we exclude ourselves? And of course, this sailed way over her head. I wasn't attempting to embarrass her or anything, just to send a message. And I think that's very important at this time of year that we try to send that message everywhere we can. And, you know, when you go into businesses and there's some season's greetings or happy holiday, I say to them, you know, why don't you mention Christmas? You know, I think part of the problem is a lot of people have given up or just don't speak up. And but, you know, if more people objected, there would be change. And in fact, this has been a battle going on for probably 40 years. And we've had some successes. Some major companies in Canada and the United States now do recognize Christmas. And why shouldn't they? You know, on other occasions, I've talked about the ongoing attack on Christmas that goes back a very, very long time. It was subtle at first and gained momentum. And of course, many corporate leaders have absolutely no loyalty to us as a people. And believe me, the tiny minority who would object to Merry Christmas are really not to be taken paid any attention. I think about all the of us that don't agree with the homosexual agenda. I'm not probably not the only one who's objected to this gay propaganda that some of our banks foist on us. We're ignored, but you know it's important to speak up. And in that capacity, I'm going to take my musical break now. I'm going to play some Christmas songs by a lovely lady from Tennessee. She's actually grew up in the state of Washington. Her name is Julie Keach Harris, and she's been a singer in Nashville for a fair number of years. I met her on a number of occasions, took in her show at JR's, which is a bar in Music City. And this is from her CD, Christmas Dream. This is Julie Keach Harris, Christmas Dream. This is Paul Fromm. And you're on the fighting side of me. Back with you in just a few minutes.
Lay down his soul. Stopping, and I brought some corn for popping. The lights are turned way down low. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. When we finally kiss goodnight, I will hate going out in the storm. But if you really hold me tight, all the way home I'll be warm. The fire is slowly dying, my dear, we're still goodbying. As long as you love me so, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Tonight.
again, or that I'd hear what was said. Santa put his arm around Mama, and Mama put her arm around him. So if Santa Claus ain't Daddy, I'm gonna tell on them. Well, Santa looked a lot like Daddy, or Daddy looked a lot like him. It's not the way I had him pictured. Santa was a much too thin. He didn't come down the chimney, so Mama must have let him in. Santa looked a lot like Daddy, or Daddy looked a lot like him.
Tennessee Christmas.
bells ring. Are you listening? In the lane, snow is glistening. A beautiful sight. We're happy tonight, walking in a winter wonderland. Gone away is a bluebird. Here to stay is a new bird. He sings a love song as we go along, walking in a winter wonderland. In the meadow we could build a snowman and pretend that he is Parson Brown. He'll say, are you married? We'll say, no, ma'am. Oh, but you can do the job when you're in town. Later on, we'll conspire as we dream by the fire to face unafraid the plans that we made, walking in a winter wonderland.
Truly Keith Harris. This is Paul Frobier. You're on the Fighting Side of Me. Back with you again tomorrow. Same time, midnight Eastern Time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Frobier, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe, the dauntless hero, came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen.